Hello, this is not Christopher Walken, and you're listening to The Sassoors with Pete and Jamie, two guys that put cow in cowbell, and got a special guest today. I'm all a quiver.
Hi, this is Bill Rosino, CFO, COO of Spins, and you're listening to The Sassoors.
So sit back, relax, pour yourself a glass of champagne, and enjoy the show!
All right, welcome to Sassoles, the podcast. The podcast with me, Pete, and Jason. Guys, say hi.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Talk about everything and anything is software as a service, hence the name Sassoles. Mm-hmm. We also bring on guests all the time, and today we're very excited to bring on a guest, Bill Rosino, who's CFO of Spins, which is here locally in Chicago. We know a bunch of people over there. In fact, we have a podcast that will never be heard with Rosemary because Pete forgot to hit the record button. But anyways, Bill is on now. Bill, say hey.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. Long time listener, first time caller.
Bill, being a long time listener, knows, and you know, you can take off your headset here. So before we listen, once again, like us, subscribe to us.
This episode is brought to you by NeuroNoodle. Get a doodle of your noodle, a brain map, to find out why you have the symptoms you do. Mention the Sassoles and receive 50% off. NeuroNoodle.com. Mention Jamie Carney and get 5% off.
Okay, so now on to the joke of the day. Pete.
Carney.
Yes, Pete.
I ordered a chicken and an egg online. I'll let you know.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Leave us some comments, please, on our blog and tell us how bad Pete was at that joke.
I knew that joke was coming and still laughed. Still, it's funny. It's funny. Do you get it, Jamie? You get it, right?
I get it. I do.
The chicken. Email Carney.
Did you get the chicken before the egg? Through.
Still thinking.
All right, so shout outs, Pete. Let's get into some shout outs. Let's get this over with.
All right. Ian Mays, starting a new position as senior sales executive at Clearance Jobs. He's working his job board circuit. He's doing a great job. Who else do you have there, Karnak?
I got Brendan Kreshank, bud of mine.
Kreshank Redemption.
Yeah, Kreshank Redemption. He's been a emissary.ai for 3 years, which is a texting recruiting software. You know, he's just telling me today that he's been able to really step in when Text Recruit exited their own business and worked exclusively with iSIMS because iSIMS bought him. So give him a shout out. He's one of the guys that started that up. And big Syracuse Orangemen. Or Orange, I guess, only alumni.
On to Adeli Ellie Resort Lagore. One of those names is the right one. She got married. She started off the street with me in inside sales, and now she's the regional vice president of sales, service cloud at Salesforce. Way to go, Adeli Ellie Resort Lagore. Please email with the correct pronunciation. Thank you.
I have no shout-outs today.
No shout-outs.
How about Rosemary Hafner just completing her course on how to win friends and influence people?
Yeah, and being on the podcast and forgot to record. Time.
We have the best 4 minutes of our lives spent with Rosemary.
Yeah, well, 4 minutes was recorded. I think we spent a good hour. We talked about Buffalo and all of that stuff, but one can hear it. All right, now, Pete, go to the news.
Hey, Jamie. Jamie, yeah. When I was at Outmatch, I did a podcast with Rosemary, and I hit record on that bad boy. So if anybody wants to hear it, they can probably go to outmatch.com and find the podcast. It's great. We had a great time doing it.
Awesome. Did
they have enough storage for it? Still there?
We had to cut it down.
All right, let's blow through the news of the day, or news, whatever you want to call it, news. ... Pete, since I'm reading your notes.
Oh, you got that note. Okay, good. Mm-hmm. How about Bezos stepping down? Que pasa? What's up with that? Finance guys.
who knows? A lot of the conspiracy theories out there think he's part of the deep state.
Oh, really?
Right? Just thought I'd throw it out there. Maybe we can get some more listeners.
I could just hear the X button being clicked. Or is that your Wi-Fi?
That was my Wi-Fi.
So what taking over. He was there since 97, right? So I guess it's going to be okay.
I doubt he's been running day-to-day operations for a good 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, just the complexity of that business is just exponentially, you know, catapulted the last, call it 10 years with AWS and all the other businesses they're in. You know, think about what he started versus what it is now, and it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I would doubt that he totally steps away, though. I mean, I interviewed for a job at Amazon and was told that, like, that guy is daily in almost every marketing meeting. Like, you just start your meeting and then he walks. And so I would be surprised if he's out, you know, of the daily operations totally. I'm sure there's some things that he's particularly passionate about.
Yeah. So you're saying he's not going to be in one of those trucks driving around?
Yeah.
He may be. Undercover boss.
Yeah, undercover boss. If anyone's watching Undercover Billionaire, by the way, it's amazing. I highly recommend it. It's where these guys that are, they're not billionaires. Like Cardone is worth like $250 million. They have $100 in pocket and they get dropped off in a location they have no connections with and a phone that is not connected to anybody. And they can't let anyone know who they are. And they got to, in 90 days, create a business worth $1 million to sell it. It's pretty
sounds like some of our early days at CareerBuilder.
Yeah. I mean, these guys are this is why Cardone somehow negotiated sleeping in an RV lot to do security, so he didn't have to spend any money, and he's sleeping in an RV. Yeah.
Rara, got the Super Bowl this Sunday. Budweiser peaced out. Why is that?
Yeah. I mean, I think that I thought they were, what were they doing? They were like donating some time or something. They were doing something with their money that was not advertising.
Yeah. More strategic use of funds. I think that's how you guys, you spinsters say.
Yeah. I think the real issue is that they're not having trouble selling beer right now. So why advertise, right? People are drinking beer.
Or in your case, that seltzer, right? You're a seltzer guy, right? Like a White Claw.
Yeah. Oh, let me tell you, the first time I came in contact with the White Claw, I had like three in an hour before I realized that they had alcohol in them. I thought I should probably not have another one of these.
With breakfast.
At work.
Yeah. So, yeah, I haven't had one since.
So is the Super Bowl worth it to advertise anymore? I'm just asking. I know a company that used to
spend the only advertising medium that you can reach that many people still to this day. I mean, it's way too expensive.
You get a ton of coverage before and after. I mean, it isn't just, you know, your 30 seconds or a minute. It is weeks before and possibly weeks after, depending on the performance of the ad.
Or years if you do it really well. CareerBuilder still gets buzz for their monkey commercials.
That's right.
Is there any
B2B? So you're saying you get your money back. All right.
Any B2B advertisers we can think of that are in it this year?
I mean, Uber Eats is in it. Would you call that B2B? I mean, it's them to
B2B to C.
Yeah, there's that.
Yeah, they're in it. They got Wayne's World. I just saw the YouTube like prequel of it. It's Wayne's World talking about local restaurants and buy local. It's pretty funny. If you remember the Wayne's World plugging when they had the Pepsi can and all the shameless plugging that they did in the movie, they do it in the commercial. It's pretty funny.
You know, I think the other thing about, I mean, I don't have network television anymore, so I can't watch a Super Bowl unless I go to somebody else's house. So the other thing about Super Bowl ads is what they're doing with them online, right? So now I could go watch them all today. Like, I don't even need to watch the Super Bowl to see the ads. So I think that's another interesting.
Are you just trying to stay off the grid there? Do you have electricity in it and all this stuff? Or
I do have electricity. Yeah. Although I'm trying to figure out how to make myself sufficient there too.
No, it was in his car a couple of weeks ago.
It's hard to get the signal right into the Honda Pilot So I don't, it's a little difficult.
What brand car seat do you use?
Standard issue right off the line at, off the line at Honda.
All right. So why don't we get into, I know you got one other thing down here, but I think we've taken a lot of time. Why don't we get into our main topic? Because I know, Bill, you're on the...
No, hold on, hold on. Okay. Ferrara, he's the news guy.
Yeah, I was going to say, Deadpool. 3 weeks in a row. So, well, we didn't talk about what I had written in the notes there is Cicely Tyson passed away, right? So very, very famous actor and incredibly influential presidential... Medal of Freedom winner and award recipient, lots of awards, lots of just really, really famous people really appreciated her. She was very outspoken for social justice and African-American rights. And I think it's important that we just recognize her. And that's an important thing.
So. I didn't know you wrote that in. I apologize. I thought Pete was going to move on. So anyways, let's move on to our main topic. So we got Bill Rosino, COO and CFO of Spins.
Which is the bigger title, by the way?
What's that?
When you go to like a party, if you went to a party, are you a COO or CFO? Which comes first?
You know, it depends on my mood and whether I'm having White Claw or Budweiser, but...
Which one's attributed to which? White Claw is...
I think the Budweiser is clearly the CFO gig.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have a nap.
All right. So Bill's on here. We're going to talk about the budgeting process, the negotiations that happen typically before the budget even gets into the anyone's hands, and behind the scenes sort of look at what happens there, as well as like quota setting and things of that nature. And we thought we'd talk about quota setting so they know, they understand how that works, so that it's not just we're trying to, the man's trying to screw the rep and give them a huge quota and make sure they don't hit it. That's not the goal. But I thought we'd talk about all of that. But before, you know, Bill, I know you started off the podcast before we were really going. Why don't you give us a little background about Spins, if you want to, and about the news that you sent with us today about the new investor and stuff like that.
And Bill's background too. He's been around the block.
And Bill's background. Yeah. We all know him from Career Builder. I know Bill from before Career Builder when he was working for Bridget
Kinney.
Tribune Interactive. So I was working at that time in finance at Career Builder, and we were working on Sarbanes-Oxley, if you remember.
There was a shout out right there to Bridget Kinney.
Yeah.
Who was a great mentor of mine and great supporter of CareerBuilder back in the early days. Mm-hmm. Thanks again for having me, guys. I think I won't go all the way back to the beginning of my short life. I've only been on this planet for 20 some odd years, but I did work with you guys at CareerBuilder, which was a pure joy, and it's awesome to kind of be back together talking to you now. But before CareerBuilder, I spent some time at some larger companies where, from a budgeting forecasting process standpoint, you learn a lot about if you have the resources and you have the complexity that some of these larger companies have, kind of how that might look and what you might, some of the elements you might aspire towards. So Leo Burnett was a company I spent some time at, multi-billion dollar Chicago ad agency. I was in the interactive division there. Kind of my whole career, I focused on technology. Then went to Tribune, which is a large large media company. Was in there, was a CFO of their interactive division, which was one of the founders of CareerBuilder, one of the founders of Cars.com, one of the founders of Apartments.com. And so I got to work with those businesses and got to see, things from both the big company side and then also the startup side. And that's where I first met Jamie and some other folks. Very cool to think back to that, Jamie. What was that like? 2004?
We were out in Bryn Mawr. Yeah, it was 2003, I think.
Yeah. Right? Okay. That's hilarious. But it's almost 20 years. And it's interesting to kind of think back to, the business that CareerBuilder was then, business that Tribune was then, right? Mm-hmm. Multi-billion dollar company. Now it's not so much. No. The whole media landscape is flipped upside down. CareerBuilder early days, I joined to shore up some of the growth pains they were having. I joined as controller, and the foundation of any kind of budget or forecast is really just rock solid blocking and tackling and counting. I have this Maslow kind of hierarchy of scale that I use with my teams, and the very bottom of that pyramid is bulletproof accounting. And from there you kind of grow it up. Things along the way include one source of truth, cultural buy-in, people, process, and technology kind of filters all across the pyramid in terms of the things you need to work on to achieve scale. So my background, technology, accounting, finance, went to DePaul in Chicago, worked my way through school, went to Kellogg, similar to some other folks on this call, Jason,
Go Cats.
And, last couple of years have been working in smaller technology companies that have been SaaS focused, work for a marketing software company called Cheetah Digital, stood them up as part of a carve out that was backed by private equity from Experian. They were in 17 countries, 1,700 employees, kind of stood them up on their own with their own people, processes, and technology so that they could continue to scale. Joined Spins just a little over 2 years ago and was kind of, given the similar task of setting up Spins to scale. Spins has been around for a long time. The last 10 or so years, revenue has been growing at a CAGR of 25% or more. And what happens in that situation is you start to double. And so you double a few times over that 10-year period. Before you know it, you're not a $20 or $30 million business anymore. You're over $100 million. And you're in a completely different sort of ballpark in terms of what the business needs. And the things that people had been doing to keep customers happy and the lights on really involved a lot of elbow grease, a lot of heroes, as they like to say, in the technology industry. And that doesn't scale as well. And so, we hired a whole new executive team running the gamut from kind of chief commercial officer, chief people officer, Rosemary Hafner, Jason Lovelace, myself as CFO, COO, CTO. All those roles got filled with folks who are familiar with how to build scale through people, process, technology. And so Spins, by way of background, a data technology company that's focused on the wellness industry. We provide data to food brands and to retailers to help them understand how to stock their what to stock on their shelves and what to produce. And at the end of the day, our mission is sort of all about trying to put better for you products, more of them in front of more people. So we give our brands and retailers the data to do that.
Well, I mean, that's interesting. You guys just got a round of funding. And how many rounds of funding have you been involved in since you've been there now?
Since I've been at Spins, just this one.
Oh, this is just the one?
Yeah. Okay. And so it's, to be honest, this company has always been profitable has grown profitably, largely funded, from that. This funding really has come about as a result of, wanting to get Spins to the next level, bring some excellent partners that, have a lot of experience growing companies like ours. Doubling and tripling them again. You get to a certain size, and I think the doubling and tripling becomes a little more challenging, and you have to be very strategic about how you do it. And these partners that we brought on in this last round, I think, are going to be great for that.
Bill, what the hell is Spins? Where did the name come from? How do you tie into?
Yeah, the name isn't necessarily, so the name is really well known in the industry.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're not changing it. But the name has nothing to do with what we do, or it doesn't have any particular, it's based on so the company was founded like in the 90s. And it was kind of intended to be a bit of an internet.com darling. That didn't work out. The CEO founder, sort of bought it out of the ashes of that. The original founder name was, I believe, Spence. And it was Spence Information Systems. And I think it became Spins. And that's it.
And having partners or PE firms invest in a company, I think a lot of people think, especially people at CareerBuilder might think poorly of that because there's different types of investments from PE firms. Some PE firms go in there and try to tear you apart. And some and That same PE firm might invest in another company as a high growth type of thing. I've been involved in the PE side since CareerBuilder. And I can tell you for a fact that when we have a new PE investor for the company I work for, it typically means they want growth. They want to grow this thing. They want to gas it. And what they want to do is bring some sort of different fundamental view of how they look at the business and how they think they can gaslight your model.
For sure.
And it changes by each of these PE firms. The ones I'm with now is all focused on quota setting and QAM, but budget comes down to the very beginning of all of these. They want to look at the budget because a lot of times they made their valuation based on certain numbers that you may or may not hit. So why don't we get started there? So, you know, being the CFO, your behind the scenes look at, in your opinion, when does the budgeting process start? When do the negotiations start? And how do we get to where we're at when it comes to December, January, where we're sort of rounding the circles around where we're going to end up?
Yeah, you know, just going back to what you just said, you know, I think I've heard you say this on another podcast, Jamie, just to prove I listen. You know, it depends on the business too, right? So if you've got a business that's struggling and an investor comes in, it's more of a turnaround. And, you know, like we've seen that situation where an investor comes in and they're trying to actually optimize what's left of a bad market situation, and they'll make money, but it may not be pretty. There's that type of investor. And then there's growth equity investors who come in and they see a situation that, as you said, you know, needs a little more gas in the tank, and they'll be strategic about how you're going to get to that next stage of growth. And they'll provide the funding to be able to do that. So I think that latter situation is the one that, you know, we all want to be in. And I think, you know, it's growth equity is kind of the way I like to think of it. But there's so many different flavors, right? The budgeting process, you know, kind of, I like to think it should ideally be on the back of a strategic process. And so, you know, it varies by the size of company, because this all sounds great. And the reality is, you know, if you're a startup or if you're a $5, $10, $20, $30 million company, chances are you're doing the best you can just to kind of close the books, have a budget, forecast cash, meet payroll. All those things are the priority. As you get a little bit larger, more sophisticated, ideally what you'd like to have is a multi-year kind of strategic plan that's really taking a look at your TAM, your products that are currently.
TAM, by the way, for those, is total addressable market. Just needed to call that out for some people that are listening. Go ahead.
Thanks for that.
Like me.
Yeah. Like me, who couldn't remember what it meant, but knows what it is. And so I think, you know, when you look at your TAM, you look at sort of your product set, their penetration within that TAM, and you're thinking about your strategic plan and sort of how you're going to increase your penetration and how you're going to grow your business. The budget needs to be very informed by that. And so that's the ideal scenario. And, you know, ideally you're going to be updating sort of your strategic planning and sort of going on every day, I think, at certain levels of the business. And so it's not too early to be thinking about your budget for the next year in the summer. And so, you know, historically more, call it mature organizations, and you could define that by size or age. But, you know, the ones that are, you know, more woke, are going to be thinking about it in the summer. And the idea would be that you would then start with target setting. You know, so what growth rates, what products, what's the performance year to date for like the first, call it 6 to 8 months of the year? What growth rates are we seeing across products and segments of our business? And then what investments have we been making to drive those growth rates further? What challenges do we see that are causing some of those growth rates to be under pressure? Try to then factor all those things into targets for the following year for revenue by product, for cost of revenue, for OpEx, for EBITDA. And then that target setting process is sort of just a socialization of, hey, executive team, here's what we're thinking. Here are the assumptions we're using for the target setting. It's all top down, right? And it's based on our strategy. It's based on our results to date. Then you get feedback. You start a feedback loop with those folks to kind of socialize that information and try to come up with a better version of that top down based on the information you get, kind of also still high level top down, but you're at least talking to the people who are in customer success and what it is they think they need to do to improve retention. Talking to the people in product development and finding out what they need to do to deliver on the next set of iterations of products that are gonna drive the success. Talking to the people on the sales side about, you know, hey, what does the funnel look like? And, you know, and where are we on kind of driving new leads? And do we need to make different types of investments? And come up with your targets. So that's when it starts, I would say, is kind of mid to late summer is when it starts. Targets should be pretty well agreed upon by September, and then you get rolling.
Yeah, I think, I feel like resource planning occurs all year round, actually, and the strategy is all year round. You just start locking in numbers probably by September. Yeah. But I feel like the entire time, you know, at my company right now, every week we are discussing strategy and what's going to happen at the end of this year and what's going to happen for the next 2 years.
Totally agree.
Jason, you had a question, I think, right?
Well, I've got a bunch, so I don't want to overwhelm you, Bill, with questions. I guess two things I was thinking of. You started to mention the other groups in a company. So who gives inputs to that process, right? And I've been at companies where the functional teams have some inputs, and I've also been at companies where, hey, guess what? Here's the money you get, right? So help us understand, like, the inputs to that, specifically who are those people who have those inputs. And then I guess the second question that came to mind was, is budgeting this for this next year or this next cycle, you know, different because of COVID, and what does that mean with past company performance? Who the hell can count on 2020 for any decent number, you know, that sort of thing. So to those two questions.
Yeah, let me back up one step to something Jamie said that just was an important reminder at the first. So, you know, the from my perspective, there's a three-way integration of kind of the accounting information that we get every month, the budget, which we do once a year. And so the budget is like, it's totally stale by like next week, right? And so the 2020 budget's gonna be like old news next week. We're gonna close January. And what we will do to replace that budget is we will create a forecast for the rest of the year. And so we do a 1 month actual, 11 month forecast that is, you know, kind of another version of the budget, if you will. But the budget always stays the budget. There's like three sort of different dimensions of financial information in the year. There's your actuals, which are your actuals. There's your budget, which is one point in time that you kind of signed up to. It's what you promised you would do to your board and your owners. So you're going to probably have bonuses tied to that number. That number never changes, your budget. Your forecast changes every month. And that's just to let everybody know, hey, here's where we think we're trending towards our budget. And so just wanted to put that all in context in terms of how I think well-run companies should think about the budget forecast versus actuals. But your question in terms of like the people who are involved, depends on the phase of the process for the budget. We ideally get every sort of cost manager involved. So like if you're at the manager level or director level, you're responsible for a P&L, whether it's revenue or costs or both, either, we're gonna be speaking with you on a monthly basis to update the forecast. We're gonna be talking to you probably a little bit more in depth in the fall during the budget process to kind of understand you know, what your thoughts are for next year. The COVID impact, you know, in my business, varied. It's been overall, we had some disruptions early on, call it March, April of last year, where our customers and our partners were all trying to keep their employees safe and keep supply chains open. Mm-hmm. Once they solved for a number of those things, things more or less got back to so-called normal, and demand for in-home food consumption is through the roof, as you know. Yeah. And so a lot of our customers are doing very well. And so that's kind of translated to our business. The changes for us, though, have been that, you know, we don't have any T&E really. Our office expenses are down. Yeah. You know, those things have kind of been adjusted for. Knowing when they're going to come back, how we market to our customers, You know, there's two large kind of expos that occur in the food industry. You know, those haven't been operating, obviously. And so that's affected how we go to market. And, you know, so adjusting to sort of like, okay, well, previously we got a lot of leads and information from those types of events from a marketing standpoint. As you know, Jason, that's important.
Yeah.
How do we now go around the old process and create new ones? And we've been pretty successful doing that, I can't really, the only explanation I can say is that, you know, there's just a fundamental demand for our product as our customers are having to continue to deal with their outstrip demand.
Right.
Oh, my take on that question, though, Jason, is the company I was at was impacted by COVID just because of the delay. It wasn't impacted anything, but everything was delayed. So we measured ourselves against 2019. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of how we said, you know, 2020 is a wash. We know probably the first quarter of 2021 is going to be a little rough, especially we're a global company and we have a lot in EMEA and they're in extreme lockdowns, that we sort of pushed conservativeness in Q1, but we compared ourselves to 2019 more than 2020.
Yeah.
Similarly, we're looking at like Q3 and Q4, mm-hmm. particularly as it relates to quota setting.
Yeah. And Bill, do you think anybody's gotten like, so you talked about like the two big expos that didn't happen. I mean, I happen to know how expensive that kind of stuff is because I do that. Has anybody gotten comfortable with the idea that, oh, wait, we don't have to spend that money. So guess what? We're not going to spend that money. Or is from a budgeting perspective, you know, if I'm thinking about the listeners to the show, you know, what can they expect in terms of the funding of their part of the business? You know, is this just like, well, we did it without, you know, the last 6 months of 2020, so you could do without forever?
Yeah, there's, I think it's along the same vein as sort of like office space, if you will. And, you know, we're doing without that. There's a recognition that when it comes to teaming and culture, that we still need to bring that back, but it will probably not be the same as it was.
Yeah.
I think the expos might be a similar type of thing. In our industry, however, though, you know, it's fascinating because they use these expos to taste new food.
Right.
And so, you know, it'll be interesting. I don't think anyone's expecting them to go away. It could be though that you rethink how many people you need to spend and how you go about it. I'm sure there's going to be some learnings, but it's not going to go away.
Wouldn't you think it'd be probably one of the last things to come back? Because you're not going to go to an expo when no one's going to the expo.
Yeah, I mean, right? How are you going to get 10,000 people to an expo again? Ever? Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, so that seems like it's going to be a tough one. Pete, it looks like you have a comment or a question.
Yeah, I do, because I got a couple finance guys and I'm the sales guy of the group. Let's just say COVID isn't happening, but this always happens with you finance people. I'm a sales guy. Yeah. It's February 4th. Why the hell don't I know what my quota is? What's going on?
Yeah, good idea.
Hey, good point. One, it's usually because you're manager.
Yeah. Well, I'm proud to say that the spin sales team do know what their quotas are. We were able to get those out in January 1st, you know, for first, to your point, probably the first time ever.
Hey, first time ever, I got all the Flexera comp plans out last week.
Nice. You seem pretty defensive, Carney.
Hey, I took ownership of it. And
today, Junior. So what's going on? Is it an EBITDA thing or, you know, oh, I don't want to commit now to this number. Okay, let's wait till April and we'll give the 2021 numbers up. What is going on just between us guys?
It's funny. It's a great question. I don't know if you're going to like my answer. Finance people to a sales guy, a sales leader, a very accomplished sales leader, by the way, who's has my respect and admiration. Is
you're already on the show.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're already on the show.
But I'm editing.
Before I go on to say that, you know, probably over the years is guilty of asking for a lot of changes to sales comp plans. And so, you know, I think that every year there's a new flavor, right? That, you know, hey, well, what if we, you know, I don't want to necessarily penalize folks for cancels. I don't want them to have to resell the things that are ad hoc. I don't, you know, shouldn't it be, you know, shouldn't, why should his quota be penalized for this or that? Or
it's, and, you know, not so there's fair.
There's usually a fair amount of that going on. And that was the case this year for us too. We made some changes to the plans. Rarely have I ever seen comp plans get rolled out exactly the way they worked the prior year. And so what ends up happening is you have to then model the, if this, then that type of impacts of the changes you want to make. And then you've got to make sure that it's going to all make sense and hold together. That takes a little bit of time, I think. We've already usually baked the numbers. There's just a question then of understanding, you know, what our coverage is and whether or not we're going to, you know, how much of a gap there is between, you know, the budget and quota. The quota should obviously exceed the budget. Last minute sort of thinking around, you know, based on the talent we have, the number of heads we have to fill, the ramp that we're going to experience filling those heads, recalibrating all that stuff in the month of January too takes time. Yeah. And, you know, the more seasoned the sales leader, the more seasoned the finance team, the quicker it gets done. But if you don't have, you know, if one of those elements are missing, you see these delays. And I certainly have been guilty of not being seasoned in this, not expecting the changes to the plans, the complexities that ensued.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
It's also, there's a thing out there called the QAM that a lot of people use. It's called QAM, quota allocation model.
Yep.
It's the model that sets everyone's quota so that you know you have enough quota on the street to fulfill your budgetary needs with an overassign that is either set by your CRO, CFO, CEO, yep, or the executives. Living document.
Wait, hold on. Is that the model where the board gives you a number and then what do you call QAM? Is that also fudge or pack? You add a number as you pass it on to different?
Well, no, that's where you actually set the quotas, right? So the biggest problem, some of the delays that could occur before you actually deliver the quota statements is if three or four, let's say senior sales guys that are carrying full quota quit. If they quit, you're going to have to redo your quota and your QAM, and you might have to raise everyone else's quota to make sure you have, you know, the amount of allocation out there in the market to hit the number that you want, especially when you're, and so I live in the QAM. I mean, we do weekly QAM calls for this year and next year.
So Jamie, you raised with our earlier, executives. You know, I think it is really important to not give, you know, you want the quota to feel like it's doable. You want people to feel like they can win. To me, that's a huge priority. And I know that probably goes against, you know, what some folks have experienced in different places. But, you know, at the end of the day, it's like, if there's someone who's left, I definitely don't want to cram that down on the people who are still there. Yeah. I want to go replace the person who's left. And I'm going to have to figure out a way to deal with the ramp time and just readjust kind of the timing of the bookings within the year. And, you know, hopefully, you know, my gap revenue could suffer and maybe my ARR won't, maybe my bookings won't.
ARR for those people at home is annualized recurring revenue. So it's ACV, but recurring ACV. ACV is annual contract value. I totally agree with you. And sometimes depending on your sales cycle is really where it comes into play. Because if you have a long sales cycle, you're going to have to possibly just push the quota onto people. If you have a smaller sales cycle, you can maybe hire to replace those vacancies. But it becomes a big problem. The goal with all sales reps, Pete, when you write the plan, is 2/3 win, 1/3 doesn't.
And well, I didn't hear Rizzino say that.
That's a healthy plan, in my opinion. If you're not going to have that's the minimum.
You think, Bill? Okay.
Yeah.
But if you don't, if you go below that, the people that win, the only reason why you'll keep people is that the people win are making ridiculous money. Then you can deal with, you know, maybe only 30% winning and 70% not, because that 30% has life-changing money on their, you know, at their fingertips, and the other people want to stay and hopefully hit a home run in the next year.
Do you guys think pay at risk will go away? Everybody gets a salary. What's the market wage? You get it. When you have pay at risk, you're saying that success is optional.
That sounds like socialism.
So I guess it's here.
I didn't mean to get
market wage.
I don't think it will, unless I'm misunderstanding the question or the concept. But, you know, because it's like, you know, that's not the case for the executive team. That's not the case for any of the leadership kind of within most companies. You've got some pay at risk associated with how the company does, associated with how you do relative to goals and objectives. There's always some pay at risk. The on the sales side, you know, that's where it's kind of most directly tied to your actions. You can argue about whether your quote is fair or unfair. You could, you know, so I don't think it'll go away.
No, I don't think so either.
Who hates sales more, marketing or finance?
This is a really good question you brought up, because I was honestly just about to say, you know what nobody does is give, I swear to God, is give finance the credit that there is a whole bunch of knowledge about the business there. And the marketing team doesn't know that. Nobody knows that, right? The marketing team doesn't know it. The sales team doesn't know it. So they all get pissed off at finance. And the answer is there are all these analysts and all these people who know a whole bunch about the business and nobody ever asks them. So anyway, I guess two things for you, Bill, to respond to. But that is really funny that Pete just asked that.
How often do you beat your puppy, Bill?
Your puppy?
It's a very loaded question, I guess is what I'm saying. I think in a healthy organization, I hope that's true in either case. And that, you know, you can partner with one another. I haven't had, I mean, to be honest, even at Caribler, I didn't have that experience. I think there was always healthy tension, but you know, and I didn't have that experience. And maybe even I worked with, but I think the key is making sure there's transparency, which it sounds like based on some of the questions, maybe there isn't always transparency around, okay, well, how do we reach these quotas? And then how does the plan work, and how do you win? And so, you know, for me, it's really important to look at past history. And so we will adjust that based on certain factors if we need to, either in the salesperson's favor or not. And so COVID year is a great example. So like, as I said before, Q3 and Q4 bookings for us, we actually had two really good quarters in the last half of the year. We kind of took those, we averaged the whole year. We looked at the last half, which is a little higher. The whole year is a little lower. We kind of took something in the middle, kind of by team and by rep, to set the quota going into 2021 in terms of what was expected. So for example, you know, if in the last half folks were killing it and they were, you know, top reps were doing 1.5 million on an annualized basis. But then if you looked at the annual number, it was more like 700 based on the first two quarters, you know, we came in somewhere around 1 million. The idea being there that, you know, we don't expect you to have record-breaking, you know, numbers again, until you show us that's the case, we're going to come in somewhere in the middle. And so, you know, showing them the actual data to say, hey, you know, here's how we came up with your number, and then having an opportunity to have a conversation with them about that, I think is critical.
Jason, I believe you had a couple questions, right?
Well, I was just thinking, like, Bill, the way that I've started to use finance teams more and more too is just help with making sense of some of the analysis that needs to be done within marketing, right? I mean, most of the marketing teams I've been on, we didn't have analysts on the team, right? We weren't big enough companies to make that a specific job, but there was always somebody in finance whose time we could use a little bit of to understand what's going on in the business, either with, like you mentioned, leads and things like that, or sales from a product perspective. So, you know, how do you, what's your thought around how you support the teams in doing that? You know, just knowing that there are a bunch of people who understand that analysis there.
Yeah. So that's a great point. I think that's critical. So, you know, you're going to have sort of folks who are dedicated to FP&A and folks who are dedicated to accounting. And the folks on the, you know, and I think you're going to get help from both sides of that. But oftentimes the FP&A folks are the ones that are working with marketing on a monthly basis to understand, you know, what their spend looks like, how that's comparing to what was in the budget and updating the projection. And then questions will come out, like you said, of those conversations that happen regularly every month. And so you'll have a dedicated kind of analyst who will walk you through that and will be your partner to kind of help you understand that stuff. I think it's critical. Because otherwise, you know, I think each, and whether it's marketing, whether it's engineering, whether it's product, success, sales, or whether it's a particular sort of line of business that's delivering products on a daily basis, you've got to have that finance partner. And so I make a point of, you know, having that FP&A function kind of be an FP&A slash ops function that, you know, works across all those teams and understands how they, what their bread and butter is, understands what they care about, understands what their goals are, and then is really in a great position to answer tough questions and do analysis when it comes up.
Yeah, that's really great. And I think, you know, I have said this a couple times in this session, but for people like early in their careers or in very specific like niche jobs in a company, you lose sight of how interconnected everybody is, you know? And so I think it's important to remember, because Pete's question is really a good one, which is, why are we sort of butting heads over things when the reality is we got to be connected on all these things? Yeah. It's easy to forget, I think, that sales and marketing typically on a different floor or not even in the same location as a finance team, right? And so everybody's connected, and I think that's an important thing for people to remember.
Yeah, and by the way, Pete, if I get wind of any of my people hating sales, they're gone.
Yeah.
Unless the salesperson's Pete, right?
Yeah, then they get a pass.
Then they get a pass.
I test.
Really good to see you guys.
Pete, cue the music, whatever this music's going to be.
We'll see. We got special music.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Turn your head and cough.
Second time today.
You should. Says I cause a ruckus with the ladies.
You don't see it? One.
I brings the ruckus to the ladies.
Oh,
so,
my God. Causing a ruckus with the ladies.
Where they
look at that headshot. That's power right there. That's a tribute jacket.
How's it going, guys? Go to that
you
island.
Google, no, if you ever,
I did not go to that island.
No, because the quote is, "I brings the ruckus to the ladies." No, I wasn't going to have that. But there's this artificial intelligence site that does quotes of people and puts their picture on it. And they did a quote of Leon Black, but they took a quote from Curb Your Enthusiasm, Leon Black. Now it's,
and here we are.
It's really true. He could have said it, Pete. We just assumed it was Leon Black from Curb Your Enthusiasm. Maybe he did actually say that.
Oh, by the way, are we rolling or is this just the prelim stuff?
He just records because he forgot. When we actually did Rosemary's.
I didn't fucking forget.
We did Rosemary's and then all of a sudden he emailed her back to us. Hey. And she was like, oh, darn. But no way was she going to come back.
After maybe that, like an on-air light.
Got, bullshit, we got 4 minutes of it and it cut out.
I wasn't sure how polished to make it. That's, I think.
Polished.
Wasn't, I was going to maybe stop swearing if we were recording.
Yeah, you got no. Pete on here. You got Pete on no. here. So the polish
is four guys shooting it.
You got to remember, Pete, I was in a meeting with Ferguson, Brent, and Pete. And they were talking about something, and Pete just threw up his paper, slammed his fist in the ground, and said, "I'm leaving," and walked out. And was like,
that's how every like, meeting continue.
Here I am.
And you wonder why? You wonder why you got escorted out of the building?
Let's get this.
I know he's really.
Are we recording or not?
You got
recording.
Yeah.
You're on.
I was just asking if they're overriding you with data.
I mean, you ask the guy at the time of day, he tells you how to build a watch.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So it takes a few minutes to get the machine totally wound up, heated up.
Today, Junior.
You guys, is this reel to reel? How are you guys recording?
Eight-track.
Yeah.
Can you hear Carney's Wi-Fi?
Yeah, my Wi-Fi, I do have a mesh Wi-Fi and it still goes out, so.
He's got to climb up the telephone pole to get it going.
I send you notes. I give you notes, the damn thing. It isn't what you do. You give it to
me. What's the notes?
This, You're listening to...
You can say, this is Bill Rosino, I'm sipping a White Claw, and I'm COO today. And you're listening to Sassos.
Hi, this is Bill Rosino on the... All right, that was good.
Sure. Not one take, Bill. Read the damn script. You never, ever read it. Ever, ever, ever.
I'm usually working right up until this occurs. All right, man.
I see that. What, in your third level of your basement? Yeah, come on, let's go.
I am. You like that, huh?
There, for finance people, there's only three kinds of people in the world, okay? Those that can count and those who can't. Pete, I didn't get to share my recruiting philosophy with you, which you might appreciate, which, you know, that I use.
When you come back, if you do need a haircut, Pete is doing Flobies for anybody for free.
Good to know.
Oh, he's doing Flobies.
I've always admired his do. I think...
It's grown out a couple of weeks ago, Bill. You should have
grown out about
it.
A centimeter.
There is a difference between a 2 and a 4. There
is. You look like a baby squirrel.
Is this thing recording?
Jamie, you know, it was you just missed the we had terrible weather here a couple days ago. I am in Florida. Awesome. Yep.
Oh, sweet. I'm going to be there in 2 days. But
it was like 58 degrees, 20 mile an hour wind storms. I think I saw a grown man steal some mittens from a woman. The Red Cross is on their way with, I think they're going to be giving us Mai Tais or something. The human casualties.
Was he sitting in a folding chair?